back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. My name's Eric. With me is my co-host, Ray.
Hello.
And even though you may be looking at the GW webpage and seeing a whole lot of nothingness when it comes to 40K, there's actually been a lot happening over the last 2 weeks, and we're here to bring you all that news. For one, we've got our hands on not only the latest two supplements, the Death Watch as well as Space Wolves, but also got my hands on the new Imperial Armor stuff. So we'll go over a couple brief things about that. We've got several tournaments to talk about, which on the surface might be like, well, we've always had tournaments on the show, but we're starting to see a nifty trend and some pictures coming back from those tournaments. And basically, TOs are starting to switch up their terrain, and it's having a definite ripple effect on the meta. But at first, we talked about some of the new releases coming out already. And so I heard this talked about on another podcast. They were hell-bent to go over every data sheet inside of like a 40-minute episode, which we are not going to do here. But they brought a great question up, and I'm going to pose it to you, Ray, because you and I come from very different backgrounds in terms of playing style. So in the current meta, what role does Forge World serve?
The current meta?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, at least up to this point, it's been kind of like for certain linchpin models. You know, things like the Leviathan Dreadnoughts, in case in point, kind of having trouble really pinpointing anything outside of those.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because I kind of would say the same thing as somebody who's been in the meta for a long time and playing for a long time. And basically it starts with, well, Forge World used to come out with small items that were very specialized, so Games Workshop knew there wouldn't be a high demand for it. So if we do a low run in resin, it will be much more cost effective. So for example, you wanted to buy a rhino, but you wanted your chapter's doors, you know, symbols on it, because the rhino came with generic doors, you would buy Forge World rhino doors, and then you could have, look, I have Night Lord rhinos and Ultramarines rhinos and all this stuff like that. Then they started coming out with their own units, and some of them were like, well, that's cool. I don't know when I'd ever use that, like Titans and whatnot. And then it became the repository of, I'm going to find the most broken thing to get put me over the edge. I kind of looked at it as like steroids for competitive play. And like everything from the Malefic Lords to some crazy update that it's some unit that missed an update, so therefore it has some old rules. So the way they interact with the current rules gives you a crazy advantage. I can't remember the name of it, the Navara, which was kind of like a Tau Riptide variant. It had all these extra guns on it. And then I was just as guilty. I had a Warp Hunter, which is a Eldar tank with had D weapons and a flamethrower and all this stuff like that. All kinds of mishmash wonkiness. And it was funny because in 5th edition, which people call the original golden age of competitive play, Forge World wasn't allowed. And I was okay with it. Not that anybody cares what I think. But the only reason Forge World got allowed into competitive play was, A, it helped some really bad factions become competitive because Games Workshop at that time was not doing any updates. And B, the argument was, show me something that's already in the game that's not any more broken though it's in Forge World. So it's kind of like, all right. Which I thought was such a lame argument, but that's all of a sudden how you got some of this other stuff in there. And once it got in, it was impossible to get back out. So the reason why I bring up this question, being kind of both of us come at the same conclusion, Forge World's basically the cortisone shot for you improving your army's poor performance in tournaments. When was the last time Forge World came out with a 40K model?
Strictly
40K?
I couldn't say.
And that's exactly why I made this question interesting, because that's both of us have that same stereotype, and many other people agree with us, but it has been probably prior to 8th edition that they've come out with a pure 40K model. So if you look at what they produce today, they produce 30K, some odds and ends for Blood Bowl, and I don't know if they do anything for Warcry, I take that back, but Adeptus Mechanicus, what's it called? The Titan Legion game, the 8mm Night game, whatever that's called. Yeah, that one. And then the their X-Wing ripoff with all the airplanes. And a couple like fantasy models. But they really haven't been coming out with anything specifically for 40K. And I'm like, huh, I wonder if that's the new business model, that they don't do that anymore.
I did hear stuff about Forge World basically becoming meant for, like, the specialty. I didn't necessarily think that that meant that they were going to completely discontinue making stuff for 40K, but, I mean, it would make sense.
So then I take a step back and I go, okay, we got one Forge World update in 8th edition when it first dropped, and then we got our big update for 9th edition. Who knows if we're ever going to get another one. And that might be it. So I kind of look at those Forge World units, and yeah, the list of units is pretty much cut in half. The other half going to Legends only. And so I have to wonder, you know, if it is this kind of the end of Forge World being that boogeyman in tournaments at this point.
I could see that being the case, although I think it will still come down to the kinds of things getting used that's already been produced by Forge World.
True. So, yeah, some of the like Tyranid monstrosities. I know there's the Malanthrope is pretty popular on the competitive circuit. I can't remember the name of the Dichirodon, I think, or something it's called. It's basically it's like Wolverine is a Hive Tyrant. Just goes around killing things.
Yeah.
And then like I could that. See, like, yeah, that's it. And then there's, I think a lot of people are sleeping on is they were the scourge of 6th edition for a long time. Where in the Necrons, they have these sentry pylons, not the super big one, although that one's still pretty cool. But they had these little ones, and they used to be god awful broken because the way the rules interacted, you could teleport them around with the Veil of Darkness. But they're still pretty nasty, and they're pretty reasonably priced. And now they are a fortification, so they don't even take up a work slot, but they do take up a detachment. But I can't imagine Necrons doing more than just maybe a supreme command detachment for the Silent King and maybe a super heavy slot for a monolith. But so there's some neat stuff in there. But you know, for the most part, I'm kind of like, yeah, these nothing in this particular book goes absolutely broken must take or absolute trash I will never take, other than the Taunar. Oh my god, if you bought that, I feel so sorry for you right now.
Especially if you bought it because it was under 1,000 points right at the beginning of 9th.
Well, now it was under 1,000 points, but they swapped out some keywords. The biggest one had lost battle suit, so now it no longer benefits from drones.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so now you get this gargantuan big thing that gets shot up to death. So I'm like, okay. It's still a really cool model, but I'm just like, oh, so bad. I'm also interested to see because every Jukari competitive list we've read about in the last 6 weeks included a Reaper. That really did not change all that much. Went down a little bit in wounds, but went up in attacks. So that was interesting. So probably continue to see that moving forward. Another thing I've heard several players like, well, they used to port Forge World units into the 40K codices and make them into plastic. I only remember them doing that once, and that was the Tau missile tank. I forgot what it's called. It's basically a hammerhead shell with a big missile pod on the top. It's not a firestorm. I forgot what it's called.
Sky something or other.
Yeah, Sky Strike or Sky Swarm or Sky Shark. Or I figure they've got a fish in there somewhere. That's the only time I've ever seen a Forge World unit become a plastic kit. So,
wait. Wasn't the Trigon originally a Forge World unit? I seem to remember hearing someone say something about that.
I want to say the original Trigon was actually an armor cast model, which was another company. They licensed out a whole bunch, like all the original, the Butt Ugly Warhound Titans, but a lot of the Tyranid monstrosities went to them, and then they discontinued the relationship.
Oh, okay.
So that might be it.
Probably.
So anyway, I just thought it was interesting to hear this discussion about, you know, where does it, and I'm like, I think Forge World in terms of competitive play, I think they might be dead. So love to be proved wrong, but I'm looking through it. I'm going just one or two. I mean, some of the stuff I'm like, okay, like I remember playing against this and just getting my excrement pushed back in. It's the Vulture gunship. For those of you who don't remember, it is basically a gargantuan plane for Imperial Guard, 14 wounds and toughness 7. And it has not one, but two, what's this got here? Gunships covered with a heavy bolter, two multi-rocket pods, and the Vulture Hellstrike. And most people said, oh, we're going to replace those with the Vulture Gatling Cannon. Two of them, please. Each one of these is range 24, heavy 20, strength 5, AP 0, damage 1. So the reason why I remember this, two of these came across the horizon along with two Helldrakes. Yeah. I just went, oh crap. And I just watched my entire army get deleted. I was like, in one strafing run. I was just like, oh my god. So, little things like that. I remember the Scourge of 5th edition was the Vendetta that's back again with its twin las cannon, 72-inch, heavy 2, strength 9, AP minus 3, D6 damage. And it has two of those, so it gets four las cannon shots. But if you want, you can replace it with a Hellstrike missile rack, which is heavy 2, strength 8, AP minus 2, damage D6 plus 2. And what makes this thing even better, it also hovers. So after you've blown everything up, it can drop down on a objective. It's very cool. Oh, yeah, and it transports 12 Astra Militaria models.
Of course it does.
Yeah. The breaching drill is still going to be here to stay. That thing is ridiculously powerful. Just unbelievable how that slipped through, but they must need to sell. And I wanted to promise I'll get to that Necron battery. That I thought that was neat. But for the most part, just, yeah, you're like, okay, interesting. Oh, that's Tau. Yeah, the sadness of the Tau supremacy suit. Oh, my God. I feel bad, but oh, well.
It happens sometimes. Things get good, things get bad.
Yeah. I'm upset because I own several of the old Forge World custom battle suits.
Yeah.
Like, all of them got legended.
Yep.
All gone. So, which was fine, but because they had like all these weird, like, it comes with this war gear for free. I'm like, why doesn't that take up a signature system? Because it's Forge World. Here we go, Sentry Pylons. So each one of these is 6 power for points values. They're toughness 7 with 8 wounds each, and you can take them into units of 3. And you've got various options. The stock option is the Gauss Exterminator, 40-inch range, heavy 2, strength 8, AP minus 3, D6 damage. Each time you make an attack against aircraft, add 2 to the hit roll. So if you go from BS3 to BS2 versus aircraft, that's taking into account the minus 1 for being hard to hit. The Heat Cannon, 36-inch range, heavy D6, strength 8, AP minus 4, D6. And then each time an attack is made with this weapon against targets within half range, the damage is changed to D6 plus 2. So, which is one of my pet peeves about this book. Remember, all the Imperial Meltas got the new rule, but all the Xeno stuff said, well, your stuff is too weird. We can't change it now.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't be alarmed. It's going to be the same thing. Fusion guns and all that are, and heat lances and whatnot, they're all getting the same rule. I don't know why they couldn't do it all at the same time, but it's the case.
Because GW.
And then last but not least, it's so frustrating. Focus Death Ray, 36 range, heavy 1, strength 12. So here's another anti-tank option. AP minus 4, D3 plus 3 damage. And all of these come with the teleportation matrix, which means I think they can deep strike, deploy. They all come with living metal, so they are healing 1 wound per turn, every command phase. And when this unit is first set up on the battlefield, its models do not have to be set up in unit coherency. Instead, each model must be set up within 6 inches of another model from its unit. From that point on, each model is treated as a separate unit, which sounds great and all until you realize it has a movement value of 0. So they're going to be sitting next to each other for quite some time. So I was like, oh, okay. And the Big Brother version, which I still have, not quite as nasty as it used to be, but it's still pretty cool. 120-inch range, so thank you, Forge World. Just in case we were playing on a larger board for some odd reason. Heavy 2d3, 16 strength. AP minus 4, D3 plus 6 damage. It's also blast. And if you're shooting an aircraft, you're plus 2 to hit. But at least it lost its the macro ability, so it used to do double damage against Titanic keyword models.
Yeah, this comes out of the fact
so there you go.
Forge World has always had some weirdness to it.
Yeah. That was one of those weird ones. I love playing with that, especially during the night meta. I was like, oh, which one's your warlord? Okay, he's dead. What do you mean? All right, I made 2 saves. All right, so 3 got through? Yep. Okay. Take, 18 damage. What, with all 3? No, that's the first one. What? But then the thing was immobile and wasn't all that powerful. So then he's like, all right, that thing's going to die. And then they pour like every shot they had in their army into the thing. Like, ah. So anyway, that is all the fun I can tell you about Forge World. So basically, yeah, if you've seen changes to the Imperial weaponry, expect your Xenos and Chaos weaponry to match the same upgrades, and if they're similar enough. In terms of the other two books, the supplements of Space Wolves and Death Watch, Ray, anything catch your eye with those?
So there are some things I was a little bit surprised about. One is, this is a good kind of surprise, $30. I don't think we're going to see any supplements for cheaper than that, partly because they're hardcover, but at least they're not more expensive. You know, anybody who just got done spending
true.
$50 for the Space Marine Codex will at least appreciate the fact that they're $30 and not, say, $40. I was surprised that the Space Wolves have a little blurb about successor chapters. I mean, up until this point, it's always been that Space Wolves have never had any. Their only successful one ended up basically being wiped out because of, I think it was gene seed issues. But that's not a problem now. In fact, there's one mention, actually. And it was kind of something I missed at first just because it was like a one-liner in a book. One successor chapter that's Primaris Marine called the Wolf Spears. So, yeah. And, of course, there's always going to be people who, for one reason or another, don't like that Space Wolves suddenly have successor chapters. That's always going to... And that's at the end of the day, that's going to come down to a personal thing. Some people are going to be like, yay... Now I can play Space Wolves without having to feel like I have to paint Space Wolves. Some people are like that. Some people just really like to have the idea of having their own version of Space Wolves that's not quite so Nordic, I'll say. And then of course there's, you know, other people who they're happy, you know, it's just like, well, why are we suddenly seeing this? And then of course when it comes to outside of that, there's little things within the Codex that surprised me. One is, and I'll just use the Space Wolves as the prime example here, is they have the Iron Wolves, their version of the Tech Priest. I kind of half expected it to still show up in their supplement, even though it kind of shows it in a little bit about it in the, for the Tech Marine profile in the Space Marine Codex. But no, it is just in the Space Marine Codex. The only thing you'll see for Space Wolves in the their supplement, and this can be the same, this is the same for Death Watch as well, is it's just their absolute specific things.
Yeah, I think for me was, I kind of agree with you there as well, because it simply just, it felt like versus the rest of it, it seemed pretty small for both of them, you know, considering they have, they're fairly specialized. And I was like, oh, okay, that's it. All right, especially because both of these were standalone codices not too long ago. So
yeah, but, another thing that surprised me.
I agree with you.
If I would define it real quick, there was that one librarian came out in the first Death Watch box set that had the Gene Stealer cult in it.
Oh yeah.
He has his own profile now. He is a special character, a unique character, not just a Death Watch librarian, which really surprised me.
Well, you know, Space Marines don't have enough special characters, so it's important to get as many as we can.
Well, and I'll say this, if memory serves, he's a Blood Raven, so that makes him the first non-Forge World Blood Raven character.
That is true. By the way, that guy, Angelos, did survive the Purge, and he's not been legended. He is actually in the Forge World book.
I didn't think they would do that. I think the only special character that they had a model for that was legended would be, I don't remember his name 100%, but I think it was Carib Colm. And that's because he is currently residing inside a Leviathan Dreadnought. And that is the version that went forward.
Ah, that I did not know.
He is also the guy you're referring to master of the Red Scorpions.
Oh, see, I didn't know that. All right. So I guess the guy you're talking about is Codicier Notarian? Notarian?
Yeah.
Okay, so he's got a pretty neat profile. Movement 6, weapon skill 2, ballistic skill 3, strength 4, T4, 4 wounds, 3 attacks, leadership 9, 3 up save, Death Watch bolt pistol along with Duty's Revelation, which is sort of close combat weapon of some kind. Strength plus 1, AP minus 4, D3 damage. He's got Angels of Death, Battle Psyker. Let's see here, he's got... Yeah, it's 1 to all psychic tests when he tries to do any smite or witchfire psychic power. Aha! The first time we've seen the classifications of psychic powers mean something. And then each time he denies the witch, he adds one to, if they're within 12 inches. He can manifest two, deny one. He knows Smite and the Xenopurge discipline, which is the new one here in Death Watch. And let's see, he's got Imperium, Duchess Astartes, and Death Watch keywords, as well as infantry, character, psyker, librarian, code keywords as well. Pretty cool. I think the biggest surprise for me was that the Primaris guys don't get special issue ammunition. I thought that was really odd.
That is kind of odd.
So I'm not sure where that changed in the fluff reasons or game balance reasons or whatnot. So, I mean, there's a way to still give it to him using a stratagem, but it's I think it's 2 CP. So if you need to have it, you got it. And but I was a little surprised by that because it just in the beginning he just kind of says look for the weapon profile. I'm like okay, and then I'm flipping through the weapon profiles. I'm going like okay, I see bolt gun, I see the 438 different types of combi bolt guns, and the only one I see that could possibly be by Primaris is Stalker pattern bolt gun. And that's the heavy one, strength 4, EP minus 2, 2 damage. That one has special issue, but that's it. Everything else is standard stock. I was like, huh, that's interesting.
I think you're missing something somewhere. I can't look at my mine right now, but pretty sure it's still something that pretty basically everybody gets.
I'm just going to flip to it one more time just so I make sure I'm not wrong here. Each time a unit is selected to shoot, if it contains any models that are equipped with a weapon with this ability, then before you select any targets, each weapon with this ability can fire special issue ammunition. So, So it looks like it's on a weapon-by-weapon basis. So your shrimpy marines make a difference, apparently.
Okay, there's about that.
Yeah, So I guess, if you switch all your intercessors to Stalker Bolt Rifle, you're good to go. Here we go, Hellstrom Bolt Rifle on the heavy guys. Those I saw on the list.
A unit status sheet will list all the abilities it has. Certain abilities that are common to many units are only referenced on the data sheets rather than described in full. I think this might be a small issue of them just forgetting to mention it because, I mean, that's like their thing. Why wouldn't they take it from the Primaris? Where do you see where it mentions which ones it can take it? They can take it.
So if you go all the way in the back on the weapon profiles.
Okay.
So for example, say a ranged weapon, Death Watch bolt gun. And then under abilities, it says special issue ammunition. I'm like, okay. So I'm like flipping through it. I'm going like, which ones are the ones the Primaris guys can take? And I don't see it there. I'm like going, huh.
Right, so yeah, definitely no special issue ammunition for the Primaris war gear unless you use a CP. As I was looking over that.
Yeah, so.
Definitely, even the new stuff isn't actually on that list. Everything's from the regular Marines.
Yep. Thought that was a surprise. So I was like, okay. So I still have my Death Watch floating around from, I don't remember what that was, the game, the box set with all the Harlequins.
The one with Harlequins was Death Mask.
Death Mask. So I still have those. So I was originally going to convert them all into Primaris Marines, and I guess I won't now. So I'm like, okay, build them as is. So that, so pretty interesting. Definitely check those out. But these supplements, they're a little thin, but I think you hit it on the head earlier there. I think they're appropriately priced for that. So be curious to see how that comes out. Because we got, Death Guard and Ultramarines next? No, wait, Death Guard and Blood Angels. Thank you. A new one of them. So those are next in our first Chaos entry. So I'm curious to see what that looks like. So that should be a full codex, though, not a supplement, right?
Yeah, the Death Guard will be a full codex. Because I don't see any reason for them to make that a supplement. That would just be off since they just made them their own codex.
Yeah, I think it would be odd to come out with a supplement if you haven't come out with the Chaos Space Marine codex yet.
So they'll be their own codex.
A little weird. Yeah, but anyway. And then the last thing, a little bit off topic when it comes to competitive play, but the Marnius Kalgar comic book's out. Issues 1 and 2 are available on stands now, and they're a pretty good read. So give it a little time to breathe, but definitely pick it up because there's some interesting plot twists in there. They definitely gave the authors a little bit of room to play.
Yeah.
And it was kind of cool. This guy who does not really care much about Ultramarines, I was glued to the page. So that's a big deal because I rarely read. So I thought that was a pretty big deal. So. Anyway. I
phrasing. That's dirty, but.
So. we're a clean show. Let's keep it that way. Anyway, let's get to a core of what the show's about. We'll be back right after the break with some tournament review. We've got lots of tournaments both here in the States as well as abroad. We'll be back right after this break.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
Welcome back after the break. As we mentioned, four tournaments to talk about this particular weekend. Nice to see that some people are able to congregate among the pandemic. Kind of a little bit jealous of them at the moment. But anyway, we first stop, we go to Marietta, Georgia for the Warzone Dark Times tournament. And one thing that's very interesting to see is they've posted several pictures of their tables and their design for 9th edition with their terrain. But we're going to talk about that next episode in greater detail. Meanwhile, let's get to the nuts and bolts of who your top five are. Ray, who did come in the top five for that event?
In fifth place was Bjorn Cantrell. And fourth, he was playing Chaos. Fourth was Andrew Gardenhire playing Adeptus Sororitas. Third, Jamie Paris playing Ultramarine. Second, Thomas Bird playing Ultramarine. And in first, Damian Owen playing Cult Mechanicus.
So interesting right off the bat, 1, 2, 3, all from Team Pro Tabletop. Which I thought was, didn't know if they were still kicking around at this point with COVID. They had to cancel their event as well, so good to see them still active. Let's take a look at Damon Owen's list. Cult Mechanicus, top spot. Oh my gosh. All right, brace yourself, Ray.
Okay.
So Forge World Mars, it's a battalion. We start with Data Locus as your first HQ. Second one is Tech Priest Dominus. That becomes the Warlord, and he took Learnings of the Great Genitor for his Warlord trait. He also took a Tech Priest Manipulus in the third HQ slot. And then, 3 units of 10 Cataphron Breachers, all armed with a heavy arc rifles and arc claw. Wow. Then he added 1 unit of 15 Corpusari Electro Priests. Those are the shooty ones for those of you scoring at home. And then, of course, he's got the new ones. 2 units of 8 Cerebus Raiders and 2 Archaeoraptor Fuel Slaves, which I believe is that the bomber? I have to look that one up. Hang on. I got to get that page open. Fuel Slave is the bomber. I believe it has the... he also gave it the... Hold on. He's got some war gear on here. Chaff Launcher. Heavy Stepper. Command Uplink. So he can use this. He can extend the Leadership 9 to units around it. I would love to own this army. I can't even find 10 boxes of Cataphron Creatures, much less 30 models to field an army, which is probably something else we should have talked about is as I look at some of these armies, if you're worrying about the meta for LVO, if that's going to happen, but even if you're just gearing up for 2021, if you got the models, smoke them if you got them, because it looks like GW is having a real tough time with supply chain in this time of COVID. So your local game store not only needs your support, but they need some stock. If I hear the word allocation one more time on a podcast, I'm going to be like, what the heck? So yeah, your local retailers are having a tough time getting product from the big G from Nottingham. So anyway, Cataphron Breacher, Arc Claw, Heavy Arc Rifle, T5, and OBSEC. I believe there are 3 wounds to start.
I want to see it right.
Yeah, looking it up. Give me a sec. Add back. There it is. Cataphron Breachers. Yeah, 3 wounds. T5, 3 wounds, 3 up save. Bionic, so they got a 6 up invul. And do not suffer the penalties for moving and shooting with heavy weapons. And with a heavy arc rifle, that's a 36-inch heavy 2, strength 6, EP minus 2, D3 damage. And when you're attacking vehicles, that bumps up to D6 damage. The arc claw is strength 6. AP minus one, one damage when attacking vehicles bumps up to D3 damage. And then because you're Mars, you're pretty much manipulating the cantibles to your canticles to your liking. So which you basically kind of their version of their kind of random combat doctrines there. Shroud Psalm is always popular because that gives them cover even if they're not in cover. And Benediction of the Omnissiah, which allows you to reroll ones if you don't already close enough to one of the command models in the army. Bah! That's basically a adept player telling Marines, I can do it too. So we got Marine players, second and third place, both played Ultramarines. Both are from the same team. Bet you the same list. He's got, first one, he's got, oh, Rabuta Gilliman. Then he's got a battalion featuring Chief Librarian Tigeris, Primaris Captain the Bike, two units of Infiltrators, one unit of Intercessors, a Primaris Apothecary, two Victrix Guards, Attack Bike, two Devastators, one with Lascans, one with Grav Cannons, and a unit of Hellblasters. Interesting. No Eradicators.
Gaines is different.
Well, first of all, I can read it. That's awesome.
So.
He's actually also playing Space Wolves. What's up with this? Anyway.
Just a patrol detachment with a captain and one captain, incursors, a five-man squad, and a unit of Wolf Guard with not. Nine. One is right there randomly says jump pack, so I don't know what's going on there, but six with lightning claw and storm shield. One with Sturdy Chain Sword and Storm Shield. One with apparently two with Sturdy Chain Swords. And then the Wolf Guard pack leader has a lightning claw and it's just a random mashup of a melee.
Yeah.
But then yeah, then it goes to the Ultramarines. We've got the Supreme Command attachment with Gilliman in it, and then the attachment of Ultramarines with Chief Librarian Tigerius, a squad of Infiltrators, the Apothecary, Victrix Honor Guard, an Attack Bike squad with three Attack Bikes with Multi-Meltos, a five-man Scepter squad with Plasma Exterminators, a Suppressor squad, and then a Dev squad with four Grav Cannons and a drop pod.
And to double check that Wolf Guard unit, by the way. It looks like they all can take jump packs, so it just might be the way they got formatted it for Battlescribe.
Okay, the thing with Wolf Guard is it's kind of, when it comes to Space Wolves, Wolf Guard is kind of a catch-all term because Wolf Guard, there are Wolf Guard, the Terminators are called Wolf Guard. And just about any kind of veteran is called Wolf Guard. So you can imagine what kind of confusion that can create.
Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't look like it's any better in this version because, the Wolf Guard are a separate data sheet. It's basically an elite choice, and you can mix and match all kinds of crazy weapons in with them. But then in the Grey Hunter, I think their sergeants are called Wolf Guard as well. Yeah, they are. Wolf Guard pack leaders. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, oh, okay. I'm totally confused. So I'm sure it makes sense to all the Space Wolf players out there. Anyway, interesting card tournament because not only did first place come in was AdMech, but the Wooden Spoon, Mark Hall, coming in with last place with Cult Mechanicus. And here's the funny part. He almost has the same list. Data Locust, two Tech Priest Dominus, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3. So he went with five-man squads, but he's got 1, 2, 3, 4 units of five Cataphron Breachers, and then two units of Cataphron Destroyers. Two units of, that one unit, sorry, it's just a real big one, of Sakarian Rust Stalkers, and looks like nine of them, a full squad of 10, my apologies. And then another one, where do you find these models? 1, 2, 3, 4. A unit of four of the Dragoons, the big chicken walkers. And, of course, a termite assault drill. So this is actually a really good list. This probably wasn't his day. And interesting, he was forged with Ryza, so he's probably using those destroyers, Cataphron destroyers, for all their plasma upgrades. They basically have veterans of the Long War on AdMech. So, all right. Ray, what tournament am I going to next?
How's about the YHP Fall Brawl 40K?
Lovely Fredericksburg, Virginia, home of many battles of the American Civil War. But today, it was all about 40K. Our top five looks something like this. Fifth place, Jonas Beardsley, with Imperium. How vague. Fourth place, Shane Watts with Adeptus Sororitas. Third place, Matt Cesar with Harlequins. Stephen Christopher comes in second with Necrons. And your winner with Chaos Space Marines, TJ Lanigan. Take a look at TJ's list. It's actually a Chaos Soup. I take that back. Bray, you want to tackle this one?
All right, so we've got the starting off with it. It's a battalion detachment with Chaos Demon. It's Chaos Undivided. So we've got a Change Caster, a Lord of Change, and the Changeling. Looks like the Lord of Change was the Warlord. Gave it the Impossible Robe. He's got, in the troop slots, he's got one unit of Horrors, 30 strong, and then 5 units of Nurgling. Each one is forming. He's got reinforcements, 45 points of reinforcements of it on his list. Then a patrol detachment of Thousand Sun, the Cult of Mutation. Airman is in the HQ slot along with the Demon Prince. Of course, he gave the Demon Prince wings. He's got Helm of the Third Eye and the troops, 10-man cultist squad. And then a super heavy auxiliary detachment of Magnus the Red.
Dun, dun, dun. So it'll be interesting to see when a Thousand Sun books comes out if he moves into the Supreme Leader role. So that would already buy him 3 command points back.
Yeah, but he'd have to be the Warlord for that to work.
And good point. So who's this Warlord?
I get the feeling he didn't want him to be the Warlord. I mean, the Lord of Change is his Warlord.
Yep. Yeah. The that loadout, it makes the Lord of Change almost unkillable in the game. And of course, all those Nurglings running forward. And interesting, he's got 45 reinforcement points, so it looks like he's got a little bit of room for summoning, so that's kind of cool.
It's probably for the horrors, so he has the blues and some blues, and possibly some of the brimstones.
Yeah, it's probably a good choice. So interesting list. So it's got a lot of stuff that holds, and it's got, you know, between Ahriman and Magnus, you got some, you know, dish down a lot of mortal wounds. So TJ has been a long time successful player when it comes to Chaos. So managed to run the gamut, going a perfect 5-0 this weekend. Stephen Christopher played Necrons. Let's see what 9th edition Necrons look like in a GT list. So he starts off with a Supreme Command detachment of none other than Silent King. Then he adds a Novak battalion. And I believe they are the close combat ones, right? They're the ones that teleport. I'll flip that one up. Anyway. Yeah. I'll keep ramming through this in the meantime. He's got 2 cryptics. One has a Chronomancer with Entropic Lance and Veil of Darkness, and then 2 Crypto Thrails to keep him alive, followed by another Chronomancer with an Entropic Lance and 2 Crypto Thralls. And then last but not least, he's got a Technomancer with a Canoptic Cloak, and also gave him the Voltanic Staff. 1 unit of 10 Necron Warriors, 2 units of 20 Warriors. So good luck shifting those off objectives. Unit of Canoptic Spider, just a single guy. 2 units of Canoptic Swarms, 1 unit of 5, 1 unit of 8. And then a unit of 5 Canoptic Wraiths. And then followed last by a Ghost Ark, which is probably going to hold on to that unit of 10 Warriors. So definitely playing the go ahead, try and kill my stuff, because I will last forever. It was interesting to read. There's a great article on Goonhammer if you missed it in their Math Hammer section. A squad of 20 Necron Warriors is pretty much unkillable for if you're trying to one-shot them in one turn. There's almost nothing in the game that can eliminate them, at least in the shooting phase. There are a few small opportunities if you can do it in the assault phase. So pretty crazy stuff there.
Novak is the close combat one. They're the one they add 1 to charge. They've got the +1 to the AP characteristic when they make a charge, were charged, or perform a heroic intervention. And they also get they get both of the command protocols when it's the protocol of the Hungry Void.
Very cool. Thank you. Oh, there you go. Be ready for that. Whoever thought close combat Necrons being effective. And then just a quick look here. We saw the view from the top. What's it look like on the bottom? That's Jason Rodriguez with Iron Hands. If you had told me a year ago that Iron Hands would come in last in a GT event, I would have said you were crazy. But it happened. What's in the list? No idea. He didn't upload it. Boo, you stink. But so there you go. Some other notables from this particular event. Stephen Four came in 12th. He is your reigning Adepticon champion at the moment. Mark Gator Hurdle with his Cult Mechanicus came in 15th. Mike Sanchez coming in 16th. Austin Wingfield coming in 20th. And then going a little further down here, Ken Knox. Why does that name sound familiar? Anyway, he came in 28th. If he's no consequences, we just made him famous. And William Pagonis, surprisingly, looks like he had a dropout after day one because he only played three games, coming in 35th place. So there we go. All right. Our next tournament, where are we going to now, Ray?
How about the Mid-Missouri Maelstrom?
You guys might be surprised. It's in Missouri, Ashland to be exact. And our top five will shock you. So first fifth place.
In fifth place is Joshua Thomas playing Orcs. Fourth is Dane Simmons playing Adeptus Astartes. And third, Ben Sherwin playing Black Templars. And second, Nathan Bates playing Necrons. And first, James Keeling playing Eldari.
So yes, Ray said Eldari in first place. And for those who might, that James Keeling, that name sounds familiar. Yeah, he's part of the Goonhammer team. So Ray, what's in this crazy Eldari list?
Well, we start off with a detachment of Harlequin. It's a Sorin Spite with a Troop Master, Andy of Rain. We've got four troop squads. Each squad is a five-man unit, exactly the same. Fusion Pistol, Harlequin's Blade, except for the last one, which is Harlequin's Blade and Shuriken Pistol. And then we've got a Death Jester, and they gave it a Humbling Cruelty. We've got two five-man Skyweaver squads. Oh, excuse me, one five-man, one four-man. The five-man has all of them have Haywire Cannons, and then there's three Zephyr Gliders and two Star Bolas. The four-man squad is two all Haywire Cannon and then Zephyr Gliders and Star Bolas. Then in the dedicated transports, he's got three Star Weavers. Then an Outrider detachment of Craft Worlds. It is a custom Craft World with expert crafters and masterful shots. Got a Farseer Skyrunner with the Phoenix Gem in the HQ slot. In the Fast Attack slot, Fast Attack is three Hornets and three-man squad of Warwalkers with double Star Cannon.
Yep. So if this list snuck up on you, you should read his column because he wrote about this very same list on Goonhammer. And for those who are unaware of the Hornet, this is one of the few stars of the Imperial armor that just came out. So for those of you, let me educate. They can take in units of 1 to 3. These used to be awesome in, like, I think it was 6th Ed, maybe 7th Ed. And then the rules got tweaked around, and then all their guns were, like, heavy, and so no one used them. And now with the new rules that vehicles can move and shoot with heavy weapons with no problem, suddenly these got a little more interesting. So 18-inch move, weapon skill 6, plus skill 3, strength 4, toughness 6, 8 wounds, 2 attacks, leadership 3, 3 up save. As I mentioned, take him units 1 to 3. And the way he's got them kitted out is probably the most efficient, and that is with the Hornet Pulse Laser, which is a 36-inch range, heavy 2, strength 7, AP minus 2, 2 damage gun. He's got 2 of those. So that's 4 damage 2 shots that he's throwing downfield. You can take a lot of the usual stuff that you want for vehicles when it comes to Craft World, including Crystal Targeting Matrix, Spirit Stones, Star Engines, and Vectored Engines. But what makes this thing interesting is they upgrade it. It used to be minus 1 hit if you advanced, which stunk because all the guns were heavy. So you either advanced and were minus 1 to hit, but you didn't get to shoot, or you shot and got shot back. It's now fixed. It's always a minus 1 to hit, no matter what you do. So that's one of the big changes there. And it still has all the keywords you need, such as vehicle, fly, Eldari, and Asuriani, and Craft World. So it benefits from all kinds of goodies. So he's got 6 of those in the list. So 6 times 4, that's 24 shots. 2 out of 3 are going to hit. So 6-4, that's a third B8, so that's 16 hits, and then you're wounding Marines on 3s, so you're probably doing another 10 wounds at minus 2, 2 damage. That'll take care of quite a few intercessors for you. Plus, of course, you got all the Harlequins coming down your throat, so pretty cool list altogether. Nathan Bates, another look at Necrons. Let's see what he did, see if he did something a little different. And it starts off with Silent King. So far, no, same thing. Cryptex, Crypto Thralls to protect it. This time we took a Plasmamancer, though, and a Technomancer, and followed by an Overlord with a War Scythe and Resurrection Orb. Then he's got a unit of 20 Necron Warriors. Then he's got, in the Elite slot, a unit of 6 Scorptech. I can never get this word. Scorptech Destroyers?
Yeah.
Guys with the big swords. Yeah. Yeah. So 2 with the big big swords and 4 with the small. 2 units of Canoptix Scarabs. 2 units of 6, to be exact. And then, I don't know how he got his hands on these. I've yet to see the actual box in life. But apparently he's got 2 units of 3 of the Locust Heavy Destroyers. And then last but not least, he took a Scorptech Lord with Rarefied Nobility and Enduring Will as his Warlord trait in a final detachment of an auxiliary support. So interesting in one respect that he gets the Silent King for free because it's in the same faction, but you still got to pay the 3 command. Yeah. And then he took the Patrol, but maxed out his, he's took advantage of the Cryptex, taking 2 Cryptex per HQ slot, and still had to use an auxiliary support slot to bring in a 3rd HQ choice.
Odd, because he didn't need
so
to.
So, lots of...
Never mind. What I'm saying. You can't have 3 killer detachment. Never mind.
No, it's easy. Yeah, it's easy to see that. It's just interesting, because this list is almost the complete opposite we just looked at. The other guy is bringing 50 warriors, and then the rest of the army is designed to keep those 50 warriors alive. He brings 1 unit of 20, and everything else is designed to blow you away.
Yeah, 2 different strategies did equally well, apparently, which is actually already better than last.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, that's why the Necrons have always been mono, kind of mono build when it came to competitive play, so it's good to see it. All right, we've been on Ben Sherwin's case for the last 2 weeks, so it's about time we gave him some praise. Let's take a look at his list. Black Templars coming in 3rd place. Brace yourselves. Starts off with a Vanguard detachment. Oh my god. Do you want to read this one?
Sure, I can do it. And the HQ slot, we got High Marshal Helbrecht and a Primaris Chaplain on Bite. He did make it Hero of the Chapter, the Master of Saints in the Elite slot. In the Elite slot, 2 Blade Guard Veteran Squads. There's the Cenobite Servitors, okay. And a Primaris Apothecary. He did make it the Chief Apothecary. Got a Terminator Squad with the Terminator Surrogate has Thunderhammer Storm Shield. And then 7 Terminators with the Thunderhammer Storm Shield. Then a Vanguard Veteran Squad. It's 8 man strong with almost everybody having Lightning Claw and Storm Shield, with the exception of the Veteran Sergeant, which has a Power Fist Storm Shield. Then in the Fast Attack, we've got an Attack Bike Squad with 3 Attack Bikes, all with Multi-Melta. And in its Inceptor Squad, a 5-man squad with the Plasma Exterminators. Then in the Heavy Support, we've got an Eradicator Squad, which looks to be a 6-man squad, and a Whirlwind, the Whirlwind Castellan's Launcher.
So this list scares the crap out of me. Because now I could see it, if you had the chance to list Taylor against it, it's kind of one note. It's just that it's kind of like a Ramones album. It sounds like the last Ramones album, but if you like the first one, you're going to like the next one. So it's just got between the Blade Guard, you got heavy and hard to kill and swings heavy, hits hard. And just when you think you got an answer to killing off the Blade Guard, then you got to do the same thing against all those Terminators. And then, then you got the Veteran Squads with the Lightning Claw and the Storm Shield. So, a whole bunch of 4-up involved there. And just when you think, I've got all these tools to do that. I hope they're not vehicles, because I got multi-meltas on the attack bikes and a 6-man. That's right. It said a 6-man Eradicator Squad. I'm just trying to figure my way through this trap of how do I get around this thing. I think the only thing I could think of is, if this guy ran into a Jeff Poole style orc list, he's got to mulch through 60 orc boys before getting through anything. And because he just doesn't have the number of attacks to get through them all. But there's still, it's not like, he's only got 2 attacks. He's still got 4 and 5 attacks, to deal with. So, brutal, 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 brutal. Must be nice to have a codex. All right. Mm-mm. And then our last tournament of the weekend brings us to Spring, Texas, and the Clutch City GT, and hosted by Colin McDade, actually one of the top players in the ITC. And we're not going to go into too much detail with this particular event, but he had some custom terrain for this event as well, and he'll actually be our guest next weekend on our next episode, so definitely check that out. But in the meantime, our top five. Ray, what's our top five look like for this event?
In fifth place, we had Stephen Fox playing Cult Mechanicus. And fourth, Jared Gomez playing Ultramarine. Third, Colin Coons playing Adeptus Custodes. And second, Clifton Murica Russell playing Gene Stealer Cult. And in first, Michael De Hoyos playing Harlequin.
Pretty cool stuff. I'll go over those lists in one sec. My phone is not cooperating. There we go. All right, so let's take a look at our year winners list. Michael De Hoyos with Harlequins. Dun, dun, dun. Starts up with a battalion. Looks like he's doing Soaring Spite. So he's got a Shadow Seer along with a Troop Master. Shadow Spear. Interesting, he took a Neural Disruptor. I don't think I've ever seen one of those in play. I think it's just because it's on the model. He was stuck with it. Veil of Illusion, surprise, surprise. Twilight Pathlights and Shards of Light are his psychic powers. No surprises there. And then the Troop Master, it's got a Choreographer of War, Fusion Pistol, Harlequin's Blade, Sky Strider. Well, that's interesting. And then he took as a pivotal role, he took Twilight Fang, Darkness Bites, and made him the Warlord, as we just talked about. And then one, two, three, four, five units of five players, all with Fusion Pistols. And then with a wide variety of close combat weapons, the first one has two embraces, four blades. Second one has one blade, four embraces. Next one has one blade, four embraces. And then continues that, except for the last unit, which has all five of them have embraces. And for those who don't remember, the embrace is the AP-3 version of the close combat weapon. I took a Death Jester with Kegarex Lament and Humbling Cruelty. And then three units of five Skyweavers. Those are the jet bikes with Haywire Cannons and Zephyrglaives, and then of course 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Star Weavers to shuttle his guys around. So no surprises there. Kind of the list we have seen 100 times already with Harlequins, but it keeps working and it's just so nasty. And once we talk about the terrain next week, we'll see why it did so well at this particular event. This one's closer to your heart, dear Ray. Clifton Murica Russell playing Gene Stealer Cult, coming in second.
Yeah.
I think his four wins might account for like 80% of the wins of Gene Stealer Cult since 10th edition has dropped.
Yeah, you know, if he starts off with a battalion detachment of the Four-Armed Emperor. He's got a Magus, Patriarch, and Primus, the Blood Cove and Stratagem. Got a unit of Acolyte Hybrids of, looks like 11, maybe 12. All of them having Hand Flamer. The leader has a Cultist Knife, and all the others have Rock Saw, the Heavy Rock Saw. He's got two other units of Acolyte Hybrids, looks like they're 29 squads, with Blasting Charges, the Cultist Knife, Hand Flamers, and Rending Claws. Then there is another unit of Acolyte Hybrids, it's going to be a thing, with a bunch more Heavy Rock Saws. and then another Acolyte Hybrid, this one is another Blasting Charge squad, along with the Hand Flamers. And then, just to make sure he's got it all right, he's got one more for a total of three 12-man squads with the Hand Flamers and Heavy Rock. Oh, this one's Heavy Rock Cutters. Okay. He must have ran out of saws. in the Elite.
So did GW.
Yeah. In the Elite, he's got a Clamavis and a Locust. And the fast attack, got three cult armored sentinels with the multi-lasers. That's kind of an interesting choice.
So I can tell you right now, one of my first questions for Colin next week is, this list, when I look at it, isn't much different from the list that won Adepticon last year. So why all of a sudden is this good in 9th edition after people have been saying, Gene Stealer Cult is the worst army in 9th edition?
Good question.
I mean, I'm just kind of blown away. This is like, okay, I mean, it's got all the same old heavy hitters, and the Hand Flamer's got a extra range from going from 8 inches to 12 inches, so now they can flambe you out of close combat. But you had some of those options available to you from Gene Stealer Cult beforehand, so I'm kind of, what's going on here? So I'm also thinking, just my God, how many models are in this army?
Let's see, 3, 4, 5, 35, 65, 101. If I count right, 104.
Wow.
Yeah.
So there you go. That is insane. So, yeah, pretty cool stuff. I mean, that something just kind of smothers the board, and I mean, and then retreats when he needs to. Just all the typical Gene Stealer stuff. I guess the hardest part would be you gotta be have somebody on the table sooner or later to hold the objectives. So I don't know. We'll have to ask a little bit next weekend, next episode, when we get a little more information on how that list works. A couple other notables at this particular event, David Villarreal coming in ninth with Salamanders. Interesting. He posted some critical comments on Facebook about the terrain at this particular event. And of course, you have to talk about the guys who come at the bottom, Gerald Springer with Imperial Knights going a perfect 0-5 on the weekend. Unfortunately, did not upload his list, but it's Imperial Knights. So I guess there's Knights in the list. that's just a guess at this point. So that's your tournament coverage. We're going to take a quick break, come back after the break, go over your ITC top 10, and round out the show. Talk to you right after this. Does your game day fare leave your fingers orange or your game table pizza stained? There is a better option. You need the Necronom Nom Nom. Yes, that's right. The cosmic horror and great cuisine become allies of convenience with this darkly humorous, gorgeously illustrated, and simple-to-use guide to insanely good food. 50 recipes arm you with breakfast, lunch, and dinner from drinks to dessert and use unique grimoire of forbidden recipes. Don't tell the Inquisition, but you can tell your friends to find it on Amazon or wherever books are sold. Brought to you by the madmen of Red Duke Games, take the pizza shop off speed dial and treat your players to something new and delicious from the Necronom Nom Nom. Okay, welcome back to your ITC Top 10. A couple changes here. 10th place, Nicholas Weiss, occupying the 10th spot, 1,034 points. 9th place from Liverpool, England, Mike Porter. 8th place, Kyle Thompson from Goonhammer in 8th place. 7th place, Johan Nicolisen. 6th place, Rude Steenbachers. 5th place, Rickard Nielsen. And then 10-point lead over that is Vic Vijay, your former number one from pre-COVID times. 3rd place, Colin McDade, who will be on the show next episode with 1,086 points. 2nd place, Ken Knox, who was formerly in 1st place right after can't say really after COVID, but since 9th edition dropped. And then currently in 1st place, holding down still a ruckusing 40-point lead is Dan Sammons with 1,131 points. Ray, allegedly we have events next week. True or false?
Well, it looks like it. All right. Looking at this list, I'm seeing the Iron Hammer GT Season 2 in Woodbury, Minnesota, the Cleveland Gaming Classic GT in Vermilion, Ohio, and the Slayer of Malmo 8 2020 in Malmo.
Sounds pretty cool. So we'll have complete coverage of that next weekend, as well as, as I mentioned, a couple guests, and complete coverage of all the news this particular week. So if anything else comes up, look on our Facebook page for breaking news. Also, if you have any questions for our guests, be sure to hit us up on our Facebook page. Be more than happy to relay them back during the show. In the meantime, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast.